You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com on WCRS FM 98.3 and 102.1, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Come on!
Jubilee people, welcome to the Kinsmen with your host, Malek Haru. He's a man with a plan to bring righteous unity to the Black American community for the sake of humanity. Ladies and gentlemen, the Kinsmen.
This is Malek Haru bringing it true, and you are listening to The Kinsmen, intelligent conversation with a touch of inspiration. To everyone under the sound of my voice and beyond, peace and peace and peace be unto you. Pray for me, friends, as I stand to deliver the word of truth. You're on TalkTainmentRadio.com, the only on-demand radio you'll ever need. The world's greatest radio, radio the way it should be heard. Call in and weigh in at 1-877-932-9766. Welcome to episode 51 of The Kinsmen. The Kinsmen is a weekly hour-long talk show dedicated to descendants of survivors of American chattel slavery. Prophetically, I call these folks the Jubilee People. Jubilee was the name of our ancestors' celebration of God's mighty act of revealing his arm to free them. In this spirit, I proclaim that we are so much more than mere victims of chattel slavery. We are survivors. God is with us in our quest of freedom yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Know this, people. Know it well and thank him for his mercy and his grace. This school year, students in Texas will learn from new textbooks based on state guidelines that officially require the falsification of history. That is, the falsification of the history of chattel slavery, the Civil War, the construction era, and more. These new textbooks reportedly give no mention to the existence of Jim Crow or the Ku Klux Klan. Interesting. Racial propaganda and false knowledge are staple weapons of our oppressors who cannot stand in the light of truth. My topic today is Heritage of Hate, Symbol of Shame, Part 3 of 4, The Propaganda of History as a Weapon of White Supremacy. Visit me on the web at www.thekinsmen.blogspot.com to listen to free podcasts of The Kinsmen. Scroll down to the icon that says The Kinsmen Connection. Tap on the Freedom Fish, choose an episode, and hit play. Listen to The Kinsmen with family and friends and have a group discussion over tasty refreshments afterwards. Get connected, folks. The Kinsmen Connection, the kingdom of inspired neighbors, sharing meals, African-American network. We're breaking bread from house to house with gladness and singleness of heart. Heritage of Hate, Symbol of Shame, Part 3 of 4, The Propaganda of History as a Weapon of White Supremacy. Who hath wrought and done it, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, the first and with the last, I am he. Thus spake the Lord God of Israel, the God of history, through the mouth and pen of the prophet Isaiah. As he spoke this truth to our ancestors in the old world, so speaks he to us the living here in America today. God is with us in our quest of freedom. We are the people of the Jubilee, and we came. We came on every slave ship to America. We came. We came from kingdoms great and small. We came from cities, towns, and villages far and wide. We came from sovereign and slave, nobility and commoner, prophet and priest, doctor and scholar, farmer and blacksmith, weaver and cook, and yes, We came from criminal and brute. Simply put, we came from human beings. We came as Hebrews, Christians, Muslims, and animists. We came. We came with roots, reaching down to the very bedrock of civilization. Nubia, Kemet, Israel, Arabia. We came, bearing gifts as Africa's children. The Igbo, the Yoruba, the Ere, the Fon, the Wolof, the Serere, the Makongo, and countless others. We came to bear witness to the people of the world that it is God, not the slave master. That is God, not the slave master, who has the very last say-so.
I met my brother the other day. I gave him my right hand. And just as soon as ever my back was turned, he scandalized my name. Now do you call that a brother? No, no. Call that a brother? No, no. Call that a brother? No, no. Scandalize my name. I met my sister the other day. I gave her my right hand. And just as soon as ever my back was turned, she too scandalized my name. Call that a sister? No, no. You call that a sister? No, no. Call that a sister? No, no. Scandalize my name. I met my preacher the other day. I gave him my right hand. Just as soon as ever my back was turned, he too scandalized my name. Now do you call that religion? No, no. You call that religion? No, no. Call that religion? No, no. Scandalize my name.
It is written in the Old Testament, the Torah, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. That's Exodus chapter 20, verse 16, and that's our text for today. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And, you know, we have, as Paul Robeson says here in his song, Scandalize My Name, we have extended the right hand to America in so many ways, so many times over the generation, and it seems like our name is just constantly scandalized. It's scandalized in the media. It's scandalized from the pulpit. It was scandalized and is still scandalized in the textbooks. It's scandalized in entertainment, scandalized by the news. Lies, lies, lies. We're going to talk today about the propaganda of history. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And I have referred to something, a term that I coined on this show in the past, and I want to rehash it today. I talk about the systematic institutionalized bearing of false witness. And this is what we're experiencing as a people. You're talking about organized and institutionalized lying. And this is something that we're going to have to come to terms with, and so many of us are trying in so many ways, but it's something that we're going to have to launch a more rigorous effort in countering, because those who are committed to the lie, the people of the lie, are doubling down on the lies of previous generations and actually resurrecting some of the lies of their ancestors that their ancestors told on our ancestors, and they are commandeering control of the textbooks. Very important, keep a watch on this, because if we do not get a grip on this thing, it was written by George Orwell, the author of Animal Farm and also 1984. He said, he who controls the past controls the present, and he who controls the present controls the future. The question is, who is controlling the past in reference to us? And when we find that out, we'll find out who is exercising a tremendous amount of control on us now in the present. And if we do not get a grip on this thing, we can look forward to them exercising even more control over our descendants in the future. The question in terms of this lying, to what end? What purpose does it serve? What is the agenda? These are some of the things we're going to have to come to terms with. This show here today, I want to just simply discuss the idea of the propaganda of history as a weapon of white supremacy. And again, in an hour-long show with segments, there's only so much that we can hit. But I want to give you a taste. I want to stimulate your thinking in that direction. And we can pick up on it more in depth. And I'd also look forward to your calls. The number is 1-877-932-9766. According to Merriam-Webster, propaganda is ideas or statements that are often false or exaggerated and that are spread in order to help a cause, a political leader, a government, etc. Further defined, propaganda is the spreading of ideas, information, or rumor for the purpose of helping or hurting an institution, a cause, or a person. And when we look at the propaganda that is being spread, the racial propaganda, particularly in reference to us yesterday and today, we need to ask a couple of questions. One, what will they say about us tomorrow? What will they tell our children tomorrow about these times in which we live today and about who we are today? These are things we need to think about. In 1935, W.B. Du Bois published a landmark book titled The Black Reconstruction. This book has a chapter titled The Propaganda of History, from which I got the theme for this show. The Propaganda of History questions the ways that the Southern Reconstruction after the Civil War was being studied and taught at that time. Du Bois' first-hand research uncovered the flagrant falsification of history by white American scholars. And it was the flagrant falsification was so much so that Du Bois wrote, quote, "It is propaganda like this that has led men in the past to insist that history is, quote, lies agreed upon. It is indeed extremely doubtful if any permanent benefit comes to the world through such action." Again, we need to, again, look at what is the end of this falsification of history, this falsification of knowledge? What purpose does it ultimately serve? What good, if any, does it ultimately serve? Du Bois raises the question of the ultimate value of the falsification of history. The framework of today's discussion, I want to frame it on 2 points. One, the propaganda of history, as I've said, and I want to look at it yesterday and today. So we want to look at the propaganda of history yesterday and today. I want to talk a little bit about white supremacy. That's a deep topic in and of itself. I want to give you my perspective, and I also want to direct you to the show, Neely Fuller's show, and we will actually talk about that in a moment. And he gives a very, very insightful breakdown of white supremacy in his book, The Code, by Neely Fuller. And we'll talk about his show momentarily. So the second point is also from policy to populace. I'll bring this thing home prayerfully with the discussion of how this falsification of information, of knowledge, affects policy and how it also affects the populace itself, how people think, what people say, what people do. not just white people, but our people as well as people of other ethnic groups and races. And so what are the future implications from policy to populace? What are the future implications of the falsification of history? What can we look for in the future if this pattern continues, if we do not put it in check? If we do not put this this pattern of the falsification of information, of knowledge about us in check, what will happen in the future? If what has already happened to us is any indication, we could probably look forward to more of what we've already gotten to a magnified degree. That show of Neely Fuller, Mr. Neely Fuller, is the compensatory concept, and I want to direct you to that show right now. How do we produce balance between people and establish a planet based on justice? Join host Mr. Bobby and nationally acclaimed author Neely Fuller live from Washington, D.C., as they provide insight into the universal law of compensation and its role in the establishment of justice. Broadcast Wednesday on TalkTainmentRadio.com. That's Neely Fuller, and again, he is the author of a book titled The Code. You can Google that. That title, Neely Fuller, The Code. I think you'll be at least intrigued when you read about it. And if you read it, I'm sure you'll be impressed. We want to talk about white supremacy on that note, because the falsification of information as it pertains to our topic today is geared towards promoting and projecting what we call white supremacy. I don't really embrace that terminology the way other people embrace it. I see and understand white supremacy as a doctrine. And in the study of history, it was actually put forward as a doctrine. I think we talk about it as a fact, as an ontological fact, when in actuality it is a compensatory system. But it is white people compensating for their own sense of inferiority and their own fear. But white people fear the prospect of ever having to compete with black people on a level playing field. And that was very much the case in the South after the Civil War, after we defeated the Southern Confederacy in the Civil War. The doctrine of white supremacy was formulated, and it was formulated as part of a project to disenfranchise black men who had gained the franchise, gained the vote, and also to institute a new form of slavery, peonage, debt slavery, convict leasing system, and also a new set of laws and codes to prescribe or to limit and hinder black movement and black development, economically, culturally, socially, intellectually, educationally, and otherwise. And so white supremacy was not about a supremacy that actually existed. It was really a reaction, a compensatory reaction that was intended to suppress and hinder black people from actually fulfilling their potential, which would have actually caused them to surpass many, if not most, of the white people in the South. And we have this phenomenon around America as well in this society. And we see in so many ways that when we have anything that even remotely resembles a level playing field, at the personal level, we tend to excel. White supremacy, as it's called, is a massive complex works in tandem in various ways to advance the agenda of white people, but most importantly, to privilege white people over non-white people, and particularly over black people. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing talks about the psychological motivation behind some of this, which is the fear of genetic annihilation. That's something to take into consideration and to study. Just simply the fear that they cannot out-reproduce us. If we make babies with them, the babies do not come out white, they come out black. So you hear this in the rhetoric of the white nationalists and white conservatives talking about the fear of being overtaken by the black population, the populations of color. The same language that they're talking today, some of it is veiled, some of it is vulgar, is some of the same language that you'll find in a book, a white supremacist doctrine book that was written early in the 20th century, The Rising Tide of Race, by Lothrop Stoddard. You want to look into that book, The Rising Tide of Race, by Lothrop Stoddard. And so when we talk about white supremacy, as I understand it, from my engagement with it, my study of it, my observation, my reflection, I see it as it's false doctrine, is rooted in false doctrine, and the false doctrine in pursuit of the false doctrine's objectives by white people in every area of people activity. It has generated a synergy of phenomena that collectively and falsely advantage white people, particularly at the expense of black people. And in a nutshell, it's something that at the end of the day, there's only one supremacy. That's the supremacy of God, and they are not God. So get his picture off the wall. So Du Bois talks about the Civil War. He gives his reflection on the falsification of history. And here's where we'll talk about the propaganda of history as it operated yesterday. I want to give a couple of examples that Du Bois addressed in his book, Black Reconstruction, and in the chapter, The Propaganda of History. He says, coming now to the Civil War, how for a moment can anyone who reads the Congressional Globe from 1850 to 1860, the lives of contemporary statesmen and public characters, North and South, the discourses in the newspapers and the accounts of meetings and speeches, doubt that Negro slavery was the cause of the Civil War? What do we gain by evading this clear fact and talking in vague ways about quote-unquote union and quote-unquote states' rights and differences in civilization as the cause of that catastrophe? And if you actually surf the internet and listen to some of the forums of debates about the Civil War, there are people down south and in the north who are still arguing this very false knowledge that was propagated in that first generation or two after the Civil War to rewrite history. Du Bois says that the falsification of history was put into effect by white historians, one in an attempt to, and a successful attempt to reconcile the Anglo-Saxon race in America and protect their blood interest as a race, but also because the South was ashamed that it fought for slavery. It fought for something that was unjust, and they fought a lost cause because of it. And they also believed that God was on their side, and they lost. God said no. The North was ashamed. Northern white men were ashamed because they had to call on black men to save the country, to win the war, to save the Union and to establish democracy, at least to the extent that it was established in the post-Civil War period. And so, which was something that did not exist even for white people, truth be told. So he also says of Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln said, without the military help of black freedmen, the war against the South could not have been won. Without the help of military freedmen, the war against the South could not have been won. However, He also goes on to say the arming of black men, it's true that the arming of black men, slave and free, was a deciding factor in the outcome of the American Civil War. But one Civil War historian, I think his name was Woodard. His name was Woodard. Look up this quote. He says, "The American Negroes are the only people in the history of the world, so far as I know, that ever became free without any effort of their own." Now, here's the question. If they are superior, if they are supreme, if their supremacy is ordained by God, why do they have to put so much effort and so many resources into putting us down?
I met my brother the other day.
So Woodward goes on to say, they had not started the war nor ended it. They twanged banjos around railroad stations, sang melodious spirituals, and believed that some Yankee would soon come along and give each of them 40 acres of land and a mule. This is how they portrayed our ancestors, our forefathers, after they laid down their lives on the battlefield, the first men in the history of the world to fight for the right to fight and die for their country. They proved themselves as men above men, all men.
Call that a sister, no. Scandalize my name. I met my preacher the other day. I gave him my right hand.
Jubilee people, you're on TalkTainmentRadio.com. Check out the Kinsmen Wednesday and Sunday evenings on WCRS 98.3 FM. We go where you go. Download our free TalkTainmentRadio.com app to your cell phone or tablet. That's TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio the way it should be heard. This is Malek Haru bringing it true, and you are listening to The Kinsmen. Stay right there. Are we now experiencing the falsification of history in real time? Are we now experiencing the falsification of history in real time? Up next on TalkTainmentRadio.com.
TalkTainmentRadio.com is the premier internet radio platform offering 40-plus talk radio-style programs professionally produced, optimized for online distribution, featuring Columbus, Ohio on-air personalities. TalkTainmentRadio.com offers listeners diverse programming options covering topics such as arts and culture, love, life and relationships, technology, religion, paranormal activities, local and national politics, women's issues, alongside health and wellness. Listeners can access their favorite TalkTainmentRadio.com programs free of cost through the website. Download the TTR app to your cell phone and you can take us wherever you go. We have programs on demand to fit your schedule through our podcast. The address is TalkTainmentRadio.com.
I wish I was in school.
Summer isn't fun when you're hungry.
Give me a math quiz. I'll stay after class. I'll clean the chalkboard.
I wish I was in school.
If your child relies on free school lunches, we can help provide them with free meals this summer. Together, we're feeding America.
Contact Food Bank of the Southern Tier at www.foodbankst.org. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Terry Crews, actor, former football player, and father of five. I'm also an expert on drama. There's the good kind that comes with having a house full of kids, and there's silly drama like the drama around my percolating pectorals. And then there's the drama you can skip.
Skip the drama that comes with not having your high school diploma or equivalency. Find free adult education classes near you and finish your diploma. Visit finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org.
And lead the drama to actors like me.
Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ed Council.
This is a test to find out if you know it all when it comes to children.
Name one of the leading killers of U.S. children age 1 to 13. What's the best way to protect children in a car crash? At what age and size should a child start using a booster seat?
Don't assume you know it all when it comes to car seats for your child. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat and know for sure. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Goodwill is a global social services enterprise and the leading nonprofit provider of job training programs and career services in the United States and Canada. To pay for its program, Goodwill sells donated clothes and other household items in more than 2,700 stores and online at shopgoodwill.com. Goodwill uses the revenue earned from these sales to fund job training, employment placement services, and other community programs. The goal of the campaign is to increase goods donations to Goodwill, inspire and emotional connection to the Goodwill brand, and to elevate preference for Goodwill.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
You are now listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com and WCRS 98.3 and 102.1 FM, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
TalkTainmentRadio.com, the only on-demand radio you'll ever need. That's radio the way it should be heard. This is Malek Haru bringing it true on The Kinsman. Intelligent conversation with a touch of inspiration. Call in and weigh in at 1-877-932-9766. My topic today is Heritage of Hate, Symbol of Shame, Part 3 of 4, The Propaganda of History as a Weapon of White Supremacy. As a weapon of white supremacy. I want to also call you in for next episode, episode 52. Episode 52, I want to, with this episode, I want to actually begin to look at some of the things we can do, look at some solutions. And I want to put it in the context of countering the conspiracy to bring back Jim Crow. And encountering the conspiracy to bring back Jim Crow, what we're talking about is there is a concerted effort now. We see this in the media. We see it with social attitudes. We see it with the police brutality. We see it in the workplace. We see it with mass incarceration. And I want to use this last installment of this four-part series as a takeoff point to explore some concepts that will set up another series, another ongoing discourse, and possibly even some community dialogue as well. I would like to do some media work on this piece, but we're talking about countering the conspiracy to bring back Jim Crow. What was Jim Crow? One, we need to understand what it was. Where did it come from? What were the ideological foundations? What were the religious foundations of Jim Crow? What was the goal of Jim Crow? How did it operate? How did it operate legally? How did it operate socially? How did it operate culturally? How did it operate in terms of the academia? How was Jim Crow perpetuated in the halls of academia? How was it perpetuated in the church? Then we also want to, and this is ultimately in this discourse over time when we talk about the countering the conspiracy to bring back Jim Crow, we want to look at how our elders and ancestors survived. What did they do to survive and subsist? Some survived, some thrived, some subsisted. What were the things that we had in place culturally that enabled us to keep on keeping on in that pale hour? What were some of the things that enabled us? What were some of the institutions that we had within our communities that enabled us to sustain our humanity in those dehumanizing circumstances. I want to look at the music that we had during that time and raise some questions about how the music affected the people in terms of how it helped them to sustain themselves spiritually and psychologically in those trying times. So there's so much to look at, so much to learn. When we talk about Jim Crow, we're not just talking about black people being on the losing end of the stick, because in so many ways we were winners, even though we were being dealt a raw deal. And if you want to put it in perspective, it was our ancestors, our elders, who came out of the Jim Crow era as the world standard bearers of the quest of human freedom. And so you need to understand this, and we need to overcome our sense of embarrassment about our folk culture, about the old folks of that time. We need to sit down with them. One of the things I would like to see is a project where we get our college students, graduate students, get them mobilized out into the community. Maybe this is something that can happen next summer. Get them out there to record the testimony, the witness of the elders who survived the Jim Crow era. This is as important as the Federal Writers Project of the 1930s, where they recorded the witness of the last survivors of chattel slavery. We actually need such a project for the survivors of Jim Crow if they're going to rewrite the history today, and if they are rewriting it in real time. Not just lying about the past, but also lying about what's happening now. It's very important that we tell our own story. If the world doesn't want to hear it, if white America doesn't want to hear our story, at least, and that doesn't matter, at least let us get it down for the record for our own children and our children's children. That's very important. Now, also, I want to emphasize and point you to some films that I think are very, very enlightening, very entertaining, very encouraging, very inspiring. We're talking about Roots, that masterful miniseries that came out in 1977 about Kunta Kinte, based on the book by Alex Haley. And you also had a second installment of that. You had Roots, and then you had Roots, The Next Generations. And I recommend that you watch that. Some people still to this day can't sit down and watch it. I think you should watch it and embrace it, enjoy it, and appreciate the humanity that is revealed in that story. You want to see the film Glory, which came out in 1989. The Glory was about the 54th Massachusetts Infantry, colored infantry, one of the first black units to fight in the Civil War, and the unit that actually made the difference between the decision for the government to open the floodgates for black men to fight in the Civil War. Of course, that then turned the tide of the Civil War for the North, and the North won. We want to see also the film Rosewood by John Singleton. This movie came out in 1997, and it is about the Rosewood Massacre in Florida that took place in 1923. This is a very, very artful, very realistic depiction of life in the Jim Crow South. It also shows the destruction of a prosperous black town. It's very important that our children see these images, and young people, not the babies, they don't need to see this, but the teenagers, the young adults need to see this. Very important. America's Dream, the trilogy America's Dream, the HBO trilogy that came out in 1996, I recommend that you see that. It's actually three short films. They're a half hour each. One of the one that stands out most in my mind is The Boy Who Painted Christ Black, which closes the trilogy, and it is based on a short story by Dr. John Henrik Clark. The Boy Who Painted Christ Black takes place in the segregated South, at a school in the segregated South. A black boy draws a picture, paints a picture of Christ as a black man for a school project, and it sets off a controversy in the school system. Very important film. A Time to Kill finally came out in 1996, and this was a film that showed life in a southern environment where Jim Crow, the spirit of Jim Crow, still there. The odor of Jim Crow is still there, and in this story, a 10-year-old black girl is accosted and raped and brutalized by some white boys, and her father. They're caught, they're put on trial, but her father kills them before they can go to trial. And he goes on trial. And so the story is about the unfolding of these events surrounding this father taking up arms to defend the honor and safety of his little girl. Now, I'd also like to recommend one show, a film for the children, for the young folk. I think we need to put one in there for the youngsters. And this is a film called Brother Future. Brother Future. And it came out in 1990. It was around 1990. And this one is about a B-boy, young hustler, who is a high school kid. He doesn't want to go to school, and he wants to hustle in the streets. And one day he gets caught selling stolen goods out the back of his car, and the police come after him. He takes off running, and he gets hit by a car. But when he gets hit by a car, he gets knocked all the way back into the days of slavery. And he ends up in Charleston, South Carolina, during the time of the Denmark Vesey rebellion conspiracy, revolt conspiracy. And he has to experience what life is like for his ancestors during those days. And of course, at the end of the story, he's a changed young man. But the film is called Brother Future. So we need to make use of the resources that we have in terms of the audiovisual resources. And it's a good opportunity to bring our young people together, bring adults together. A good opportunity for fellowship and doing some creative and constructive socializing. Very important, something that many of us need to do. Too much foolishness and devilishment. It comes down when Negroes come together to socialize. And this is a serious matter because all too often it results in violence. And we must be able to come together without this happening, because if we cannot come together to socialize without fighting, how can we come together to organize and to plan to provide for and to defend ourselves against our enemies? And so a simple wisdom that I have, and this is from my heart: how can we build a nation unless we break bread together? Think about that. And so I want to talk about the propaganda of history today. And the example I have, I want to go back. Let me go back to my college years, and then I want to go back to my high school years to put this thing in perspective. So we see in Texas today, they are falsifying the history books, and they're actually rehashing the same manner of false knowledge that W.B. Du Bois exposed in the 1930s. The same lies. So, but now I had a college professor in Texas, in college from Texas. I was at OSU. I had a college professor, history professor from Texas, who taught just that the Civil War was not so much about slavery. It was about states' rights is about the difference between state and union, just like Du Bois said, the lie was about back then. And he said it was about a conflict over different concepts of civilization. This is what we're still getting at OSU, at the biggest universities in America, still getting it. As recently as 20 years ago, and we're still getting it today, start beginning this school year. So again, we need to raise the question of what is being taught to our children in the school system and how can we correct the problem. We have something for that too coming in a future show, in a discussion about community education. So when I was in high school, I had a history teacher named Miss White.